You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network, a collective of creator-owned and fully independent podcasts focused on pop culture and video gaming. To learn more and to catch up on all the other network shows, check out greenlitpodcasts.com. This week in Retronauts, oh, Daisy! Everyone, welcome to a scintillating episode of Retronauts. I'm Jeremy Parrish, bite-sized and monochromatic. And this week, we are talking about bite-sized monochromatic adventures for Mario, as well as some other adventures. And to join me on this tiny discourse, we have cool people in the studio, including...
Hey, it's Bob Mackey, and number one, fireballs don't bounce. That's all I'm saying.
It's true, but Super Balls, on the other hand.
True.
Yeah, I'm Ray Barnhold. I'm all about Super Balls. Let's go.
Super Balls.
I'm Chris Kohler. I'm wearing bunny ears for this podcast.
It's very delightful. And yes, so this episode we're going to talk about Super Mario's portable adventures his old portable adventures, not the new adventures as in New Super Mario Brothers. Quite a while back, we actually recorded an episode on the New Super Mario Brothers series. And I'm afraid that has not actually run as of this recording because that's kind of how things get tangled up on the schedule. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to hold on to that one. And by we, I mean me. We're going to hold on to that one to run after this episode. So it's going to be kind of like a chronology. So you're going to get a twofer. So this week, what you are getting is a look at Mario's portable adventures before the 3D graphics kicked in, basically. So that's Mario Land 1 and 2. Not 3 and what came after that on Game Boy, because that is Wario Land, and that's a different thing entirely. But we will be looking at Super Mario Bros. Deluxe and then the Super Mario Advance games, most of which are games we've already talked about in other contexts, so I don't think we need to go as deeply into those. But there is some kind of weird stuff about the Advance games that I didn't really realize until I went back to revisit Super Mario Advance 1 for Game Boy Works Advance, a video, and was like, wow, this game is way weirder than I realized. And so now I want to talk about it. I'm sure you folks have played a fair amount of that. I know, Chris, you've certainly internalized Toad's voice from that game. You do a great Toad impersonation, which
Thanks.
You don't have to do now if you don't want to.
Maybe at some point when we get to it, yeah.
Warn me beforehand.
You got to really build up to it, yeah.
Everything in moderation.
But this is also an episode kind of designed to lay some context, some groundwork for Bob to be able to go back and revisit the Wario Land games, because we have touched on those, but in sort of like a – I think it was like a pocket episode, wasn't it? It was kind of quick and fleeting.
It was episode 2 of this independent run, but it was every game.
Yeah, it was every game. And
so,
I feel like some of those games deserve a deeper dive. And
I
at
think
the time,
so.
We hadn't really played much of – I know Bob and I hadn't played much of Virtual Boy Wario Land.
No, and I still need to. But now it's going to definitely be played before I do another Wario episode.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's having played all the way through it, there's a lot to talk about there too. So,
and I think you do need to look at Mario Land 1 and 2 as a run-up to the beginning of the Wario
Yeah, absolutely.
Series.
Yeah. But the Wario games are kind of their own thing, so I feel like they need to be broken out.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, it's another Mario-centric episode or three. Deal with it.
Well,
that's what we're doing.
That's why me and Chris are here, because we've been doing fairly consistently.
Exactly.
Or me and Henry, I guess.
Yeah, no, Chris has been in some of these too. It's kind of a round table sort of thing. Robin. I don't know.
Right.
Something in here is round.
Yes.
It's the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, of course you expect Chris to be here. I don't know why I'm here. I just like, I just defend the Lost Levels too much, but that's
it. You're the boss of portable games, Ray.
Yeah.
You are the Game Boy King.
Okay.
We are going to travel back in time to the dim and distant year of 1989 and the Game Boy's launch. when Nintendo gave us a tiny game called Super Mario Land, which nowadays I think people tend to look at somewhat disfavorably because it's a pretty short game. It's a pretty easy game. But by God, you got to look at it in the context of 1989, where it was like, holy crap, here's something pretty similar to Super Mario Brothers, and I can play it in the car and continue playing and beat it before it gets too dark outside for me to see.
Right. It has at least like 10 times as many screens as a Game & Watch does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a Game & Watch Super Mario Brothers around the same time, but it was very simplistic. It was just like platforms that you were jumping up and down across.
Yeah, we talked about that, weirdo.
Yeah. There's not a lot to that game, whereas this does have a lot of variety. Like every stage kind of has its own theme, its own art style, grouped within four different kingdoms, all of which have their own kind of overarching theme. There are some strange gameplay variants that you don't see in any other Mario game. They did a lot with this game. And by they, I mean Nintendo R&D 1, not Nintendo R&D 4, also known as EAD. This was not a Shigeru Miyamoto joint. It was going back in time to the folks who worked on Mario Brothers with Miyamoto, and they also happened to be the Game Boy crew, basically. So
like, you made the Game Boy, you better make some software for
it. Something like that.
Yeah.
This is the one Game Boy launch game, I believe, that was developed entirely internally at Nintendo as opposed to being worked on by Intelligent Systems. They're Baseball and I think Yakuban. When I say launch, I mean Japanese launch in April of 1989 and whatever the third – oh, Alleyway. Yeah, those were all Intelligent Systems joints. But this was just Nintendo R&D 1. Gunpei Yokoi overseeing it, Satoru Okada, the lead designer of the Game Boy hardware, designing the game as well. So it's like the people who made the hardware were like, let's do this thing. Let's put Mario on here. And the outcome is a little odd, but it's good. So what was your first encounter, your first journey through Super Mario Land, Bob?
So I'm not a fan of this game, but I can appreciate it intellectually. Actually, I watched a speedrun of this game before I came here, so I had to spend about 12 minutes seeing the entire thing, which is, I mean, all the games of this era are that short if you just do a speedrun. But
even 12 sounds long.
Yeah, I guess it is more like an 8-minute game. I mean, those four scrolling sections really slow down a speedrun because you can't go any faster.
Oh, yeah.
But I had a Game Boy in probably Christmas of 89, probably, or Christmas of 90. And all the kids had the Game Boys, or at least some of the kids. But I didn't have this game, but I played it on a friend's Game Boy. And something about this as a Mario fan felt wrong to me. So I didn't really care for it in 89, and I don't especially like to play it now. I'm more of a Mario Land 2 and Wario Land fan. But I do appreciate the weirdness of it. I do appreciate the sort of globe-trotting aesthetic of the game where it's sort of pulling in real-world elements for Mario to play in. I just feel like the control is off, and that is so important to me in a Mario game that the jump has to be right. And the jump just feels very, very wrong to me in this game. So now that I can articulate it, I know why I don't like it. But as a kid, I was like, this just feels weird. This feels a little off to me.
I guess for me, and we got the Game Boy pretty much when it launched in like the spring of 89. And it was, because there was only Super Mario 1 and 2, were on the market at that point. I really had no rubric for what makes a quote unquote real Mario game.
Yeah, this felt a lot more like Super Mario Brothers than Super Mario Brothers 2 did.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And so I didn't really have that kind of, reaction to it. I just really liked it. I just love the idea of, I got a Mario game to play. The fact that it was – I mean, I sucked at video games at that point. So, I mean, the fact that it was really easy was good because I could actually, beat the game. And, I remember just, beating it. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe I beat this game. And, playing it recently, it's like, how could you not beat this game? How could you actually fail to beat this game? I finished it with, 25 extra lives in the hopper,
Yeah, but how are you replaying it recently? Was it on original hardware?
No, it was on the 3DS. I just grabbed my 3DS because I had the Virtual Console version of it.
Yeah, I mean, this game, you were fighting against the Game Boy screen, which was dim, dark, blurry.
Yeah.
That added an element of difficulty
to it. Although I wasn't playing it on, I was probably just playing it underneath a lamp at somebody's house, so I was playing it in the most favorable conditions possible. So yeah, that could be an issue for sure. But the total weirdness of it was something, Mario games were already weird to me, so this was just weird in a new, exciting way.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, it's weird. I kind of had the same experience as Chris. You know, when I was little, it was like, wow, I finally beat a game, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez,
yeah.
Uh-huh. How about that? And, you know, being a year younger than Bob, I was not quite as developed in my taste. So, you know, the things that were weird and off about it were just, like, interesting to me. Like, wow, oh, he jumps differently. Oh, these aren't really fireballs. How about that? Because I could still go back to the real Mario games, as it were. So, yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly when I got it. It was either my birthday in summer of 1990 or before that, but yeah.
Yeah, I played this a little bit before Super Mario Bros. 3, so yeah. I had the context of Mario Bros., Super Mario Bros., Super Mario Bros. 2 USA. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't as put off by the fact that it didn't line up. It was weird to me that the fireballs didn't skitter along the ground but, like, caromed around the room.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was just like, well, you know, last time Mario couldn't even shoot stuff, so I guess this is better than nothing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, I was willing to kind of roll with the weirdness. And I do remember finishing this the first time I played it, which was on my brother's Game Boy. A friend of mine, his father, bought both his friend and my brother Game Boys, so when they hung out together – he had a lot of money. They could just, like, play Game Boy together.
Nice.
So my brother had a Game Boy, even though he didn't really care about video games, but he very rarely let me play it. So the one time he did let me play it, I played Mario Land and, like, cleared the game. And then he was very upset with me because he hadn't cleared it and was like, you can't play this anymore because you're doing things that I haven't done yet. So that's not fair.
I wonder if –
but I enjoyed it.
I wonder if the idea of the Super Ball in this game came from the fact that simultaneously they were developing Alleyway, the breakout clone for Game Boy, which of course starred Mario, who was inside of the paddle.
Right.
And jumped
you didn't
out
realize
before
that
it
until
exploded.
You died.
No, because he jumps in it, I think, at the beginning of the game.
But does he?
I think so.
Okay.
But yeah, like I wonder if that was it. I wonder if they were just like, oh yeah, bouncing balls. Let's
We've
just
got
put
a
that
routine.
In Mario Land
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I was going to say because they figured out like how it just works, like in a programming sense.
Maybe, sort of
how like Balloon Fight and the swimming in Mario are related.
Or the same, the same loop, right? It could be.
I mean, my thought was always that there were, you know, sprite line limitations. So having the fireball go forward basically on the same line as Mario would have caused slowdown or glitches or something. But your explanation is probably better.
It could also be because they wanted the fireball to be just like solid black. And they're like, well, it doesn't look like a fireball. Maybe it more looks like a bouncing ball.
That thing was so hard to track on the original screen, even though it was solid black. I mean, it made it seem like it was going faster than it was.
Now fire and forget.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It has a pretty clear trail of ghosting.
right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of
some
does.
Some say you can still see the lines of the Super Bowl today.
The Super Bowl does kind of go back to that weird failed idea for Mario that he would have a gun and shoot at enemies, which they replaced with fireballs. But this kind of gets into that, and then he hops into a submarine or a biplane.
Yeah, both.
And actually, both. And does have a gun where he's like gunning down enemies. Mm-hmm. So it's the most aggressive Mario game. I can't think of any other game where he's like actually shooting stuff.
Right.
And Nintendo did acknowledge this game for the first time, I don't know, ever with Mario Maker 2, where that is a power-up is the Super Ball. Like they acknowledge the Super Ball in a game. I don't know if they've done that outside of they don't like to acknowledge this game at all. Or Mario Land 2, really. I don't think.
They tend not to acknowledge the games that Miyamoto's team, his crew, didn't work on.
Yeah.
So,
but you get the music and everything, too.
Oh, yeah?
From Mario Land 1, yeah.
But it's not like, you know, this is some counterfeit bootleg game. Like I said before, the people who worked on it, some of them had worked on Mario Brothers before. So that's why you get things like Fighter Flies and some weird little elements that you're like, oh, hey, I remember that from, you know, 6 or 7 years ago in Mario Brothers. Which back then seemed a lot longer, like a much longer time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the thing to remember is that the Game Boy was the first really good portable handheld system with interchangeable cartridges and dynamic screen graphics. Like, you know, the Microvision had come before that, like 10 years before, but that was like a 16 by 16 monochrome grid.
Yeah.
Not a lot of stuff going on there. I got to play the Epic Game Pocket Computer for the first time earlier this year. And it was interesting, but it was still a lot more limited than Game Boy.
Yeah.
That came 5 years before Game Boy, but it didn't go anywhere. It had like 6 games. I don't know. Do you guys have any info on why the Game Pocket Computer flopped? It seems like it should have been huge. Was it just too expensive? Did Epic just not know how to sell stuff?
I mean, I'm just guessing. Maybe it was too expensive. Maybe it was too large, you know, because it was a pretty big kind of thing.
It wasn't that huge.
But the Game & Watches were a lot smaller than that, right?
So. I mean, the marketing for Game Boy was very good, and it was also riding the Nintendo wave, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Epoch was a toy company, so, I mean, you have other examples in history where it's just like, this toy company doesn't really know how to market a video game.
Right. But, you know, Epoch had a lot of portable Game & Watch style games that were pretty prevalent at retail. Like we had Epic Man and there were quite a few others that they made that made it into the market. And I feel like they sold okay.
Well, pretty much. They matured and basically resigned themselves to making Doraemon games for Game Boy. So.
But the Cassette Vision also released before Famicom, right? So that's like twice that they basically beat Nintendo to the punch.
And yet
with Nintendo's own thing and Nintendo, like, it didn't do anything. And Nintendo came along. We're like, here's how you do it.
Who knows? Maybe it's just like, you know, engineers being pulled in different directions and not having time to work on games and software and stuff. Because it wasn't like they would have – obviously, they didn't come up with a licensing system and get other people to make games for their stuff. So.
In any case, it was just a real novelty to be able to play a game like Super Mario Brothers, even if it was like half as much of a game. With 12 stages. That's like a third of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, it still felt like a real accomplishment as opposed to something like Octopus on Game & Watch.
It
was not a single screen of kind of pre-printed graphics, but it was, you know, dynamic and changing. It scrolled. It had, you know, secret stages. It had one-ups hidden. It had just all the stuff you expected. There's a lot of really kind of cool stuff in this game. Lots of little details that I really enjoy, like the way at the end of each stage – the levels kind of split and you have like the hard path and the easy path. And if you go the hard path, then you get to play a little Amadekuji game where something is kind of like coming down.
Yeah.
It always goes on the right path. Is that how it works?
I can't remember.
But yeah. No, it's upper and lower. So, I mean, if you can get into the upper exit doors, then you get to play. Well, it's not the game whose name I can't quite remember either, but it's
Amadekuji.
That's
it. That's it.
Oh, okay, that's in Mario Land 2 as one of the bonus stages. The Mario Land 1 is literally just it's four platforms, and then Mario bounces between each platform.
Oh, right.
And there's also a ladder. So it is kind of based on that.
Yeah, it's kind
of. And then you either get a 1-up, a 2-up, a 3-up, or a power, or a Super Ball.
Super Ball,
flower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, there's the – you said high, low path. I mean, I
that's
consider
what it is.
Yeah, I consider the high path the hard path.
The hard
because
path.
You can't always get up there. Like if you don't know it's coming, then sometimes you can't, you know, go back and
make your way
up there. There's like falling platforms or something or just some sort of platform that's too high for you to reach.
Yep.
So you kind of have to prepare yourself. Like, I'm getting too close to the end of the stage. It's time to prep for this alternate route.
Yeah. What I remember most about it is, I mean, the weirdness, you know, not just in the fact that, like, you know, the enemies are slightly different or the physics are slightly different, but also just like, okay, there is the one stage in World 2 in which there are invisible platforms that you can stand on to stand on invisible platforms to go underneath the stage, which is very anti-Mario.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, because there's no indication that they're there. But instead of – it's the stage in – I think it's like World 2 – I want to say, and you go into this sort of like a tunnel with a ceiling where you can get underneath it, and you can see if you're on top, you can see that there's platforms underneath you. It's like, how do I get there? Oh, you jump like you're going to jump into the water, but you actually end up landing on invisible platforms that will let you walk underneath the stage. Or even in stage 1-2, I think, where there's a part where there's a whole big collection of coins that you can only get if you're small Mario, but if you're big Mario, you can duck and wedge yourself under the bricks and sort of jump and move forward. There's a lot of points in the game where you can sort of skip things by kind of ducking under and, like, you know, moving yourself through the geometry, because there's so much weirdness with like hit detection and things and clipping and stuff like that in the game. And I always, because the game is so small, you can kind of find out all that stuff because you're playing these levels over and over. And also, again, I think in World 1-2 there's invisible blocks that have little elevators in them. Then you hit
is
the
that
invisible
how you get up
block.
To the top?
Yeah. And you can hit the invisible block and it has a little elevator and you stand in the elevator and it brings you up. It brings you up through the ceiling into the ceiling right. where you can get the coins on the top and then get to pipes. And there's some, you know, you go down pipes to go to hidden bonus areas with extra coins, but there's some bonus areas. Some of the bonus areas have spikes in them. Some of the bonus areas, you have to go down the pipe and then immediately hold right. Or else you won't get into the area with the coins. You know, you have to make Mario fall. It's all this stuff that, like, Miyamoto would probably look at and be like, well, that's just mean. We can't do that. But then this game just sort of did all that. It was still easy, right? Yeah. But it was just they put in all these weird little things for you to do if you had kind of mastered the game already.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that is something to do because the game is very short. And so there is the kind of expectation that you're going to replay it. I mean, even if you beat the game, again, it is very brief and yeah, there's no way to save your progress, so you're always starting right. over from the beginning. So there is a lot of, as you say, kind of variety and different ways to do stuff and little secrets to look out for. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's there's some stuff mm-hmm. here that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
I've never really mm-hmm. poked around to find the secrets in this game.
It's all yeah. in the official Game Boy Player's Guide, Jeremy. Come on,
damn
do
it,
your research.
I didn't do my reading.
Well, I could have brought that. Damn
yeah.
it.
yeah, okay. Actually, one of the credits in the game is to Masaru Yamanaka for Amida, the middle mini game. So they did refer to it as
oh,
Amida,
oh, they did. So. Oh, okay. There we go.
Yeah, so that's something. But this is another Mario game, the second in a row released in the U.S., not so much in Japan, where Bowser does not appear.
Yep.
Princess Peach does not appear in this one. Mm-hmm. You're rescuing Princess Daisy from Tatenga mm-hmm. in the Kingdom of Sarasaland. As opposed to rescuing Peach from Bowser in the Mushroom Kingdom. It's all kind of the same thing, but it does kind of – I don't know. Like if you were following Mario games as they came out in the U.S., it actually kind of felt weird with Mario 3 to go back to Bowser and
right,
Peach.
Right, right, right. Because there had always been a different plot so yeah. and up until then.
So it yeah. felt more regressive than it was. Whereas in Japan, it was like Super Mario Brothers, Lost Levels, Super Mario Brothers 3. Then, you know, Mario USA came later, and that came right. after Mario Land. So,
right, right, right.
Yeah, so it was kind of like these little sidebars.
Yeah, it was Mario 3 and then Mario – yeah. So if you had played Mario Land after 1, 2, and 3, that would have been a big switch up for you in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this game is also wacky because it's reflecting what Japanese pop culture was about in the 80s, and that's supernatural things. Like, so you fight an alien as the main boss.
Yep.
And there are, like, Easter Island statues and mm-hmm. Chinese vampires. And mm-hmm. it's just all very like of the occult, of the supernatural, of the otherworldly, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're tapping
start,
into that.
You even start World 2 by being like dropped off by a UFO.
That's true. Yeah.
There's a UFO at the beginning.
Is the water level like the Bermuda Triangle or something? Is that what they're trying to say?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they're trying to say much
oh,
of
yeah,
anything.
It's called Muda.
Oh, Muda.
That's the name of the kingdom. So oh, wow. I never made that connection. But yeah, I guess huh. it's like the Bermuda Triangle state.
Wow.
Yeah.
We discovered something
wacky.
Here today.
So you can only escape by submarine, not by plane.
Yep.
So yeah, the kingdoms are Birabuto, which is pretty much like Super Mario Brothers 3, World 3 with pyramids and stuff
yeah,
in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of platforms and mushroom-style things to jump across.
Yep.
Muda Kingdom, which is apparently Bermuda Triangle. Lots of water, long expanses of just, you know, platforms over water. The Eastern Kingdom, which has the Easter Island and also kind of like an Amazon vibe where you're in underground caves and there's waterfalls and mm-hmm. stuff. And then the Chai yeah. Kingdom, where you have bamboo trees in the background and Kyonshi mm-hmm. hopping vampires to attack. It's all very
Mario-ish. The only thing I can't
Mario-ish.
Figure out is Birabuto, what that would have came
I
from.
I do not know.
Yeah.
We need a Legends of Localization book about this.
Mandolin, like, save us.
What would they name all of these things?
That would be one page, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but also,
I'd buy it.
Speaking of the Japanese names here, like mystery Japanese names.
Yeah.
None of the enemy names were localized, or very
right,
few of them.
Right,
all
right.
of them are basically like just taken from the Japanese,
yep.
which makes everything seem really strange if you're used to seeing, you know, turtles called Koopas
right.
and mushrooms called Goombas.
Yep.
Here they're Noko Bones,
yeah.
which is like Noko Noko plus bomb,
right.
and that's what they are. They're exploding Koopas. You
yep.
jump on them and they explode. And Chibibo, which is a Chibi Kuribo, right. which is what they are, like small Goomba in Japan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But at the time, we didn't – I
had
know.
No idea. I
didn't know yeah. any Japanese at all except for Sayonara, and that is not one of the enemy names. So yeah, like it's just they didn't bother to – or for whatever reason, they didn't localize any of the character names. I've wondered why that is. Now the character names have been localized. So when they show up in other games
– Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Some of the characters have shown up or enemies have shown up in other games, and they have you know, kind of standardized – English language names.
They're like Bomb Troopas or whatever.
Yeah, basically.
Instead of.
But it did give everything like this sense of, wow, it's weird. There's this like Tatanga guy and you're flying around in an airplane and the mushrooms are called different things and it's Princess Daisy. Wow, what's up? This is kooky and weird.
Right. But then there was no it was all a dream explanation or anything.
No. It's just
Mario's just a world traveler.
At the end you shoot the hell out of Tatanga and murder him forever.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's dead. Not forever. He comes back.
Does he?
He's a boss in Mario Land 2.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
He is.
Okay, so you get to fight as Revenant a game later.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Mm-hmm. But he's not even the main boss of that game. He's a boss.
Okay. He is a boss. That's right. Because Wario is the boss of the second game.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
So is there anything more to say about Super Mario Land?
The music is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. And that's really, like, that's, like, one of the best parts about going back and replaying that game for me. It's just, like, having a fun, good old time with that music.
I actually like the overworld music better than any of the main Mario games' overworld music.
Yeah.
It's just – it's so catchy.
Mm-hmm. The China music is very funny for how on the nose it is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But that's the only bad song. Although it gets better after that initial part.
Right.
That's Super Mario. I killed
the conversation.
Yeah, fantastic.
Right.
No, I mean it is a small game, and there's not.
What
about
the the Daisy stuff? Like we didn't talk about as a kid that like troubled me. Where you would so in Mario 1, you would rescue. You know, you would think you're rescuing Princess Toadstool, but it'd be a toad or be a toad creature. And this one, you see Daisy, you approach her, but she becomes an enemy and like jumps away. So like in my brain, I was like, is this like a monster in disguise? Is she cursed? Like what's going on here?
Yeah,
like
it's the same magic that causes the Bowsers in Worlds 1-4 through 7-4 to turn into a different thing when you shoot them.
For some reason,
it's an illusion.
It really upset me as a kid, that whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I always took it as you know, just like a variant on our princess is in a different castle. It's like you think you've rescued the princess, but actually it was a monster in disguise. You sucker.
And Daisy really became sort of the female Waluigi, and that the joke is how one note her character is, where it's just like it's a slightly off version of this thing you know.
Right. Yeah, she doesn't have a lot of personality. Like her main character tick in other games is that she says her name a lot.
Mm-hmm,
she
that's true.
She says, "Hi, I'm Daisy."
But she is a shadow fighter? Is that what that is? Whatever the Smash Brothers.
Echo fighter?
Echo fighter.
Yeah.
She's an echo fighter, I think, for Princess Peach.
She is.
Well, she also shows up a lot in Mario Kart and the Mario Sports
games. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she shows up in the movie.
She does. That was kind of strange.
The Dennis Hopper movie?
Yeah, when they were like, oh, yeah, she's playing the princess, Daisy. I'm like,
but she has a pink dress, you idiot.
It's called Super Mario Land, the movie.
Yeah, jeez.
It's weird they went to dip into that lore for one character.
What year was the movie?
93,
yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't even like a recent thing.
No. Oh, so I have a localization note from Nina Matsumoto, who is sitting behind me. And she says, Birabuto is a localization mistake. It's supposed to be Piraputo. Pira as in pyramid and Puto as in Egypt.
Oh,
Eiji Puto in Japanese is Egypt.
Yeah.
Egypto, I guess. But someone mistook the P sounds as B sounds. So
really?
There you go.
Huh. So basically they didn't even – thank you, Nina. And so they didn't even like – they didn't localize it. They didn't even not localize it correctly.
They didn't transliterate it
correctly.
Right,
yeah. Wow.
Good times.
So you're P's as B's.
Wow, I think we broke that news story.
Fantastic.
Or Nina broke it.
Incredible.
You heard it here first, folks.
When all the blogs run it after this episode posts, we'll credit Nina.
Man, we've got someone going to scoop us right here in this podcast.
I promise not to scoop you.
We see it on Kotaku. This is your last Retronauts invitation.
Maybe as one last thing to dovetail into Mario Land 2, it's kind of funny how Daisy and Wario are like the only Game Boy Universe characters that still like survived to like today, or like now they're like the main reoccurring characters.
Yeah.
I guess there's no Captain Syrup. Is that the witch in Mario Land?
She's never been in a Mario sports game.
There's a Syrup in Zelda. There's a witch named Syrup in Zelda, or Syrup, however you want to say that word.
Yeah.
That's getting off
unrelated.
Track,
unrelated.
Yeah. Yeah, get out of here, Mr. Wario Land.
Jeez.
All right, so let us talk about Wario and other sad things. So Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, came 3 years later, 1992, and looked a lot more the part. Super Mario Land has very tiny graphics. Mario is – he's so small. Everything is so tiny.
Yeah.
And Super Mario Land 2, that's not the case. Everyone is much larger. Like Mario, you know, when he starts out small, he's basically as big as Super Mario in Super Mario Land. But then he gets the whatever the hell power up. Is it mushrooms in Mario Land 2?
It's mushrooms. It is. Mushrooms. Yeah.
But then he gets carrots and turns into something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, he gets a mushroom and he gets much bigger.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back and replaying this game a few weeks ago to prep for this podcast, I was actually really surprised by how off the physics in this game feel. Like Mario Land, you know, everything's kind of limited and kind of compressed. But here everything feels sort of floaty and
There's lag. It chugs. I will say, like, it's trying to do too much, but I do respect it for that in a Link's Awakening sense, where that game also chugged at times.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like, is it chugging because it's trying to do too much and put too many big sprites on the screen, or is it slow because all of the elements on the screen are so large that they kind of – maybe they had to make the game play a little bit slowly just so you had the ability to react, you know, when an enemy was to come – because there was a lot of times I was playing – I didn't play through all of Mario Land 2. I probably played through about half of it in preparation for this just to get a – just to remind myself. And there's a lot of times when, like, you know, major things are just off screen. You know, like you jump off a platform and oops, there were spikes underneath you sitting just off screen all the time because – you know, there's very little screen real estate because they wanted to make those sprites really, you know, big this time around. And I wonder if just making the game play slowly was an effort to compensate for that.
Yeah, this gets to sort of a recurring thing that I address in Game Boy Works videos that I've been producing, is that you do occasionally come across these games where they're like, look at how big the things we can put on the screen are. We're not going to make little tiny squatty sprites. We're going to make big sprites, and it really compromises the game because the resolution of the Game Boy is so low. When you get NES size sprites in Game Boy's resolution, it compromises the game a lot of the time. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in this game, Mario's kind of his main new power, the bunny ears that let him fly, about hovering.
Yeah. Yep.
So when you see something come up, you can be like, oh crap, and you can start mashing the button and cause him to slow down. So you can steer yourself away. Like it's kind of to avoid those hazards.
I can see why they immediately moved to Wario Land because the sprites are, I think, even bigger in that game. But it's a character who can't run. Mm-hmm. And so it's about moving very slowly and trying to find things instead of just zipping from point A to point B. Like I can definitely see why they decided, like, let's go a different way. Like we like how good this game looks and how many ideas there are in it. But it just doesn't run the right way.
Yeah, and you know, by taking an even slower approach with Wario Land, they were able to make more detailed worlds. Like the graphics in Wario Land are a lot nicer than Mario Land 2.
Yeah.
I feel like this game is just like I really liked it when I played it for the first time about a decade ago. But going back to it now, after having spent a lot of time with, you know, other games in the series and other Game Boy games, I'm kind of like.
I don't know
about this one.
This is what I mean when I say to understand the Wario Land games, you have to play the Mario Land games and understand the design of those because I did some reading when I was doing an article a couple of years ago about the Wario Land games, about like Mario Land 2 especially. And I mean, a couple of things were, well, one, a lot of people on the Game Boy really found it difficult to hold the run button and jump at the same time. And so then when you look at Wario Land, you don't actually have to hold B and jump. The B and the A buttons do sort of you're pressing them at different times. And so that I think is one of the reasons why Wario Land was designed the way it was. It is a slower game. Like I think just in general, they were learning that fast action on the Game Boy was kind of hard to keep up with, so they slowed it all down. Again, even Mario Land 2 was slowed down. The other thing is that so with Mario Land 2, you know, they kind of took the sprite design right from Super Mario World, right? Like Mario looks like Mario World Mario. The mushrooms look like Mario World mushrooms. And they were kind of torn as they were developing this game between they wanted to make it weird because they were like, well, if we try to just copy Super Mario World, people will see that they're playing an inferior copy of Super Mario World. So we've got to make this game weird so that it is its own thing. And so people don't, you know, think back to the game that, you know, compare it and think that it's an inferior version of something else. But then as they're developing it, they were getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And then there was a sense of somebody putting their hand up saying, yeah, but is this Mario? Like, it's so weird. Is it Mario? And so that's kind of what you get with Mario Land 2, which is a lot of times when they tend to diverge quite a bit from you know, at what was becoming at that point an established quote-unquote Mario game, but at the same time were trying to make it a little bit more Mario-ish as well. And so that's kind of why it's like it's not super satisfying. Like it doesn't really feel cohesive. It's kind of a strange halfway point.
Do you think maybe there were some lessons learned there when they were making Link's Awakening?
Yeah, maybe.
It has its weirdness, but it also feels like a proper Zelda game.
Right.
Yeah.
But of course, the weird thing was that Link's Awakening was that it was like all the Mario games weren't made by the Mario team, but Link's Awakening was made by the Mario team. And so
yeah,
the Mario
yeah.
games didn't use Mario characters. Then Link's Awakening used every Mario character.
It's true.
Yeah.
Strange days.
That too.
Oh, also, remember how there's one level in and I'm not the first person to think of this, obviously, but I only just realized it because the last time I played Mario Land 2 was when it came out. And then I just played it again now. There's a level that's built out of Legos,
yeah.
like Legos. Mm-hmm. And there's a little, not super secret, but there's a secret-ish room in there where you pick up a whole bunch of coins. And as you're getting the coins, you can see one of the Legos says N and B on mm-hmm. it, N ampersand B. And at the time, being a child, I was like, I don't know what that is and, you know, forgot about it. And now, of course, I know that that was actually Nintendo's brand of Lego-style blocks, Nintendo mm-hmm. block N and B. Yeah.
Well, and you know, the Nintendo R&D1 group was back at Nintendo.
Sure.
When Nintendo and Block was an actual product.
Yeah.
Gunpei Yokoi was – that was the 70s, right? So he had been there since the mid-70s, 60s.
Yeah. Yep. So they did a little throwback to their own product.
I mean, that R&D1 was always good about little throwbacks to the pre-video game history of Nintendo.
Yeah. In 10 years, you'd see that in WarioWare, like, oh, did you know about this cowboy toy or this, you know, Ultra Hand thing? Mm-hmm. They would love to sneak those references in.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, but you know, kind of talking about the you know, is this Mario? Like maybe it's not a coincidence that Mario's enemy in this game is kind of himself. It's like a weird twisted version of himself. So there's like this kind of existential conflict. Like Mario is sort of struggling against what he is here on Game Boy.
Mario Land 2 is a Persona dungeon.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Wario is the shadow, the true self.
Oh God, the Wario. So I watched Spirit of This too today, and I forgot how amazing the Wario sprite is. You don't see it until the end, but he's huge. He's got bug eyes.
He's ugly.
Asymmetrical. Like Wario Land 1 Wario is like sort of my preferred Wario. It's just ugly enough. This one is just sort of like it's my fat Garfield to today. Days like over-designed Garfield. I love him.
We need a Wario with a pipe.
Yes,
meme.
Exactly. But man, and like the boss fight is so cool because you fight him and he uses all of the power-ups in the game. Like in each stage of the boss fight, you go from like room to room. Like first it's like the regular Wario, then it's you know, bunny ear Wario, then it's fire Wario.
Yeah,
so you go through
like
all these different phases.
That's super clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier also that the game is reminiscent of Super Mario World in a lot of ways. And I think the way that for me stands out the most is the way it uses the world map. And it is this kind of dynamic, changing world map. It's very much like Super Mario World, except here it's not so linear. Like from the very beginning, once you complete the first world, you can pretty much go to any other world and start poking around. You can go to the pumpkin zone, the macro zone, the Mario zone, the turtle zone. I love the entrance to that because you're just like walking along the map and all of a sudden there's this giant turtle off to the side and its neck pops out and it goes and eats Mario.
And the space zone is you go to the hippo that blows bubbles out its nose. Then you have to get in the bubble and finish the stage by getting to the top door, not the bottom door. And then if you go to the top door, you go to the space zone. But then if you complete the space zone or leave it, you have to play that hippo level again to get back into the space area. I mean the non-linearity of it is like, is there another Mario game that even does that?
No, I mean Mario World is probably the closest, and it's semi-linear. There are times when you can take shortcuts or alternate routes, but it's not like this.
But even then, it's like the shortcuts or alternate routes is like it's gated off by. To even get those shortcuts, you have to be really good at playing the game, so you're probably okay with skipping to another level. Mm-hmm. And even then, you know, it's like, oh, I'm skipping ahead to harder levels. In this case, it's like go wherever you want. There's also one random level, it's on the world map itself. There's just like an extra level.
Yeah.
You can go in there and beat it and nothing happens. And nobody has ever I mean, there is nothing to it. Like, nobody's ever figured out, like, what the deal is with that.
A lot of the game, if I recall, is a lot of it can be just picking up coins to gamble with to earn lives.
Yes.
So
yep.
A lot of it is just, like, getting lots of coins to pull the slot machine.
I got 999 coins. I went to the slot machine and did the 999 coins one. And there's, like, there's some prizes that are, like, you could get a 99 up. I got a 5 up. I was like, what the
Those bastards.
Yeah.
But yeah, they really did take a lot of creativity with the different zones. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about these, like Pumpkin Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I do like how you see enemies maybe only for one stage. So this zone has the Goombas with the Jason masks, and I think there are axes in their heads maybe. I could be imagining that
part. It's like a Halloween theme.
Yeah. But there are just so many just enemies you will see once, and they have very cool designs, almost like Bonk's Revenge style, just like grotesque, like gag manga style enemies.
Yeah.
And like so many one-off things, like when you're in the space zone that Chris mentioned earlier, Mario is in a space suit for the only time in the game. Like
right.
They do so many like unique art assets, which was fun to see after the very limited assets of the first Mario Land.
Do you guys have any particular favorite stages or areas?
I love going into the giant robot Mario. That's very fun.
I mean, it's an old observation, but I do love the fact that if you go to his lower abdomen, the level is full of balls.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Speaking of Super Bowls.
But where you are in those world – and I love the world maps in this game. Like where you are is reflected in the stages themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very cool too.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess I like the space zone because, I mean, first of all, there's a secret level, but in general, it's only two levels. And one of them, it's low gravity, right? And then in the next one, it's not zero gravity, but you can float in the air. You can jump in the air, that's the only stage you can do that in, I think. And then, you know, it's different than the first one where you just jump a little bit higher. And then it ends with, of course, the boss fight with Tatanga, which is actually a really good boss fight. And then when you get the secret level, it's like an asteroid or a comet comes and smacks the moon in the face, and the moon goes from smiling to frowning. And then you go,
yes.
Yeah. Like really, really cute. None of it makes any sense whatsoever. It's like, where the hell is Mario at this point? Like, it's not even thematically. He's just like on this weird island where like there's a hippo and a turtle, and also Mario's castle is there.
Yeah,
how does Mario
the
have a castle?
Yeah,
whoever said Mario owned.
Well, also, did he build the Mario Zone? You know, this self-indulgent robotic monument
right,
to himself,
right?
Or
did somebody just happen to build it a few steps away from Mario's castle?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I think we're to assume that Mario built it.
I mean, the whole premise originally with Wario is that Mario was kind of a dick to him.
Yeah.
And he was like the cool guy who always had the success.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of follows from that storyline that Mario was basically like, hey, check it out. I saved the princess from Bowser a lot, so I made a giant monument to me.
I guess
next to my castle.
Yeah.
The official story is that while Mario was in the doing a Mario Land 1 adventures, Wario took over his private island and brainwashed all the citizens. So Mario was just killing all of his former citizens of his kingdom, his private kingdom, I guess.
Same concept
regular
when
Giuliani.
You break the bricks in the original Mario.
Yeah,
like they're supposed to be imprisoned.
Yeah. If I were a Mushroom Kingdom citizen, I would have wanted to have been transformed into a horsehair plant. Because they wouldn't break like
just
like
right.
I'd be a cloud.
I'm just on the background layer.
So any other thoughts on Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins?
That feather is not okay.
No.
The what?
We can't do the feather anymore.
Sorry. The turban?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not a turban. It's just a
single feather.
A Native American feather, I guess.
Oh, what am I misremembering?
Is there a turban in the game?
No, there's no turban.
No.
But
maybe I'm getting this completely.
When he gets
Doki
a fire
Doki
flower.
Panic.
Yeah.
Fire Mario has a feather, just a feather on his hat to basically signify that, oh, he's Fire Mario because they can't just palette swap him. But
I guess
it looks a certain way.
Yeah, I think this is not me being like a cute or a smartass or whatever. I think like Kirby got rid of that idea where the sort of Native American headdress was sort of the fire signifier in video games.
Okay.
And it's happening here, and we've moved on past that as a people.
How did that connection even come about in the first place?
I really don't know. I honestly don't understand why fire is associated with Native indigenous people of North America. But that's just what the iconography is. I never thought about it as a kid. Like, oh, yeah, it's got a feather. But I guess it's just something you could stick on his head because you can't change the colors of the game.
Right.
So.
And it would have looked weird for him to have had a fire flower on his.
Yeah, yeah. But the bunny ears are very, very cute. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of a Kara power-up. But the one thing this game is lacking is that it has no unique power-ups. They are just a version of things you already do in other games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the rabbit ears are kind of like the tail.
Yeah, and even then you don't you can't build up like a P meter to fly. The rabbit ears are just for floating downwards and extending jumps.
Yeah.
But the idea of the hats did carry over into the first Wario Land game.
That is true,
And Wario Land on Virtual Boy. Like those are the two games where Wario powers up by changing his hats.
The hats are very cool in that game.
Mm-hmm. And I like it best in Virtual Boy Wario Land because they're compound hats. You can get like the wings and the dragon and fly and breathe fire.
Yeah. That rules.
Yes.
That good game rules.
So this was kind of the trial run for the Superior Wario Land games, and it's interesting and weird and fun, a little bit off, but they would rectify all of that with Wario Land, and we'll address that in some other episode. But for now, I think we need to take a quick pause and then jump into the rehash era.
Benito, I've been reading the Bible lately, and nobody ever told me how many talking dogs and wizard battles were in this thing.
Well, Chris, you know what I always say. If you can understand Star Wars, you can understand the Bible.
ApocryPals, part of the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Come on in. What can I get you? Sure, I've heard of Hair of the Dogcast. They're that podcast about video games and beer. From the latest gaming headlines to diving deep into the games of yesterday to sampling and reviewing craft beer from all over the world, Hair of the Dogcast is here for the gamer and beer lover in all of us. Available weekly on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Hey folks, it's Asif Khan, CEO and Editor-in-Chief over at ShackNews.com. Give a listen to our 9-to-5 Elon podcast about Tesla and electric vehicles and all sorts of cool stuff over there on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
So Super Mario Land 2 happened in 1992, and that was the last Mario platformer for a long time, more or less. But Bob, I think something is killing you. Something
we have
is bubbling up from deep inside that you need to
unleash. It's not that important. I love the music for this game. It's all based around one melody, like Mario World style, and it's all by Totaka. And it's very, very good. It's very, very catchy. I like it more than the first game's music, but I really like the first game's music. So it's just him doing even better. And the soundtrack sounds a lot richer and fuller. I think like they understood how to do more with the Game Boy at this point musically. So very, very good soundtrack. I like it a lot.
So, yeah, as I was saying, Mario kind of checked out. Wario took over the Mario Land series. It eventually just warped into Wario Land. Mario kind of put in an appearance in 1994 in the Donkey Kong remake expansion, but that wasn't really a traditional Mario-style game. It was very old-school puzzle platformer. Mario wouldn't actually be in an all-new portable platform game until 2006's New Super Mario Brothers. But in between here and there, there were five Mario games that were all remakes of previous Mario games. And these weren't just ports. They were there was a lot going on in these games. So the first of these was in 1999, and that was Super Mario Bros. Deluxe for Game Boy Color. Did you guys own this one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I will tell you.
Oh, really?
Say no.
So,
oh,
I didn't feel any need to like replay Super Mario Bros. 1 on my Game Boy Color. Like I had a Game Boy Color and I had a couple of games for it, but I didn't really feel any need to play it. And
But did you feel the need to play Super Mario Bros.?
My friend's
the Lost
mom
level?
Had. Well, no, because I had played that on on emulators at that point. If I really needed to, I think that New Super Mario or not New Super Mario Bros. Like Super Mario Bros. Deluxe was a post you know, emulators releasing, mm-hmm. post-Nesticle release. So I could play Super Mario Brothers on my computer if I wanted to. I could play Mario All-Stars. I did not feel the need to go and spend like $30-$40 or whatever it was just to have like Mario 1 and 2. And then, as I was going to say, my friend's mom had it. So I actually played it all through on her copy.
But on Nesticle, could you play it with reduced resolution that made it much harder?
Yeah. So let me say this about Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, because, I played some of that coming in here. It stinks. It's not good. I would not tell somebody to play this version of this game if they want to play Super Mario Brothers. It's very compromised.
I was a big emulator like Chris, an emulation style guy, and even with that under my belt, stealing left and right.
You mean a criminal?
A criminal, yes. I was stealing. I was Grand Larceny was my game, but I bought this just for the sheer. Novelty of like, wow, like this can work on this small screen. And I had immediate buyer's remorse, but I think the box art was too attractive. There's something about this box art that I love.
It's really good box art.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's really good.
Brand new art.
Ray, do you have a counterpoint to this?
Oh, not only do I have a counterpoint, yes. I have like a whole counter story.
Hell yeah, let's go for it.
Okay,
you were here for a reason.
First of all, I bought two copies, one to keep sealed, which I still have.
Wow.
But this – okay, I digress. Super Mario Brothers 1 was just very special to me at that time because it was like – this game came out basically 10 years after I started video games, you know, playing video games with an NES and all that. So obviously Super Mario Brothers was like the really, really first key game I started playing. So you have that just stacked on top of the fact, like Bob mentioned, this the novelty of it and having it portable was really interesting to me. And it was kind of like one of those things where it's like – yeah, I expected them to do this, and by God, they actually did it because, you know, the Game Boy Color was getting so many other NES ports from various sources and also, like, the DX upgrades and things. So to finally get, like, you know, a full NES game, so to speak, on Game Boy Color was very cool to me, and I could deal with the resolution change. However, I am not going to, like, defend it to the death or anything because obviously it is inferior to the original home version, and I wouldn't say, oh, you have to play it. In fact, I think in the case of a lot of what we're going to be talking about, like, you kind of had to be there,
mm-hmm.
but – this is my story. I was there.
But I mean, that's basically the entirety of this episode is you had to be there. Like Game Boy Color, even Game Boy Advance.
I would tell people, you know, try Mario Land, try those two games because those are different.
Right. I mean, they're different, but you know, there are a lot of compromises that go hand in hand with trying to have console style experiences on these handhelds. And I don't know that people who didn't play these handheld systems back when they were new and that's all you could play on the go. Like, I don't think they can necessarily appreciate the fact that, hey, this was as good as it got. Like, Switch was not a thing that we could conceive of in 1999. No, the fact that your home console, could you just take it off the charger and play it on the go, like, no, that didn't happen.
We had the Nomad. That was
about it. We had the, you know, the PC Engine GT or whatever, you know, the Turbo Express.
Spend $1,000.
But those weren't dedicated handheld systems. Those were handhelds that could play console games. Yeah. Like no one designed games around the Nomad.
Different.
No one designed games for the Turbo Express. Yeah. Like that it just didn't happen. Taking a console game and making it work on Game Boy Color, you know, a system with a slower chip, basically a slower processor than the NES and much lower resolution, things had to happen. Things had to be cut. And what I really like about Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, it's not that fun to play in a lot of ways because it is compromised. But what I like about it, is all the things they did to add to this game to say like, hey, we get it. This is not as good as playing Super Mario Brothers on NES or playing Super Mario All-Stars, which was probably still in stores at this time.
Yeah.
If you looked in the right places, there's like, you know, a couple of copies left at Kmart or whatever. So they said, let's add a lot of other stuff. One, you've got Super Mario Brothers 2 The Lost Levels. It's called Super Mario for Super Players here. That's unlockable when you score 300,000 points in Super Mario Brothers, which is kind of a challenge in this version of the game. But there's all kinds of extra stuff. It's just loaded with extras, like fun, frivolous, goofy extras.
And that goes to the point.
Also some like meaningful extras.
I do appreciate that there is a world map. And so you are kind of encouraged to not just warp your way through the game, but actually go through, and it keeps track of what levels you beat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it does get you to explore the entirety of Super Mario Brothers instead of just warping your way past
it
all.
It does make that whole game
the levels.
Yeah, it makes it look more cohesive, like in line with the sequels. It's like, oh yeah, this was an actual world that Mario was traveling through. And
right.
Like,
yeah,
that
he
touch,
went
yeah.
into the water and he came out of the water. And you're,
yeah.
Right. Yeah,
but there's all kinds of extra stuff, and I think to really understand what they were doing with this game, you need to look at the Game & Watch Gallery games, mm-hmm. because those were taking Game & Watch handhelds, like very simple, primitive, yeah. black and white handhelds, and saying, let's remake these on Game Boy, Game Boy Color. So in addition to, you know, like basic, very, very faithfully recreating these old 1980s LCD handhelds, they said, let's also include, you know, rearrange modes with new graphics and new gameplay mechanics. And then we'll throw in a gallery of all kinds of things you can unlock when you hit certain objectives, and there's milestones. They basically said, what we're putting here is not necessarily the most compelling thing you could own of its own merits. But look at all the stuff that surrounds it. And I really wish that we saw more retro remakes and compilations with this kind of care and just this extensive, exhaustive degree of extras added to it, because no one does this anymore. And it's
yeah.
all the extra stuff in this really sells the package. You may not like playing Super Mario Brothers 2, the lost levels, quite as much when you can only see like a third of the screen information.
Yeah.
It's hard as balls.
Something,
but there's so much cool extra stuff that you just – I do recommend this game to everyone.
Yeah,
just like look how much love they put into this.
Right. Something this game has is achievements. It has a bunch of achievements for doing
it
different things in the game.
Achievements.
Yeah.
Holy
no,
crap.
I was. I mean, I thought like I kind of wasted $30 when $30 was hard to come by in 1999. But I did like stupid, goofy things like their world map, the animation you would get when you like defeated Bowser. Like there was like a new destroying the castle animation thingy. But also like all
yeah,
of
just
the,
like Super Mario World.
Yeah, exactly. But like achievements, things like that. They wanted to add more to a very basic old like a 15-year-old experience at that point. They tried to dress it up as much as they could without altering the game any more than they had to make it work
yeah.
on the Game Boy.
I mean, like I alluded to, like Digital Eclipse was porting 1942 and Ghosts and
yep.
Goblins to the Game Boy Color, and they made them play, you know, a little bit better, but they were bare bones otherwise. So.
Yeah, I mean, they were basic. Like they said, hey, why don't we take the Micronics game and put that on Game Boy just like it was. And yeah, not a lot of fun. I did not enjoy spending money on those. You also had like Crystalis, which I think came later than this.
Yeah.
I think it was 2000.
Yeah, that was Nintendo doing that.
That was Nintendo. Well,
yeah.
NST, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the
yeah.
Bionic
and,
Commando style remake?
There was
yeah.
a.
Oh, it was
an all new game. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
But they were
Crystalis
like,
was,
hey, we have a color portable system now. Let's go back
yeah.
and mine that old content.
Right. Space Marauder was Barai Fighter. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of these games that took, you know, an NES game and were like, hey, Deja Vu. And Deja Vu 2.
Yeah.
That was great. Like, here was an unreleased NES game, like a Lost Levels
oh,
kind
right.
of experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they put it on Game Boy Color. But none of it came close to doing what they did with Super Mario Brothers Deluxe. It is a real act of affection, I think, for this original game.
And yet, you
and
know,
yet,
the problem is
they
the
really
fundamentals
needed,
of the experience. Like, it just didn't work with the screen resolution of
really
the Game Boy
Color.
They
really needed to redraw the graphics, redraw the sprites a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Burai Fighter, when mm-hmm. it became Space Marauder, when it became Burai Fighter Deluxe on Game Boy, mm-hmm. like, they scaled down the graphics a little bit, just like they did with DuckTales on Game Boy. Made it more playable than if they had just like said, here you go, slap some NES sprites in there and good luck. They really need to do that here. I wish they had done that. But let's talk about all the crazy extra stuff in this game.
Yeah.
So they did add some new animation and graphics here. Like water and lava in the background is now animated. They added much more difficulty thanks to the visual cropping, making the challenging athletic levels. Good luck with World 8 in Super Mario Brothers. That's much more difficult now, but oh well. The one really tragic compromise, I think, is that they cut out the bonus worlds in Super Mario Brothers 2, the Lost Levels.
Right.
Once you beat the game,
oh, yeah.
world, what is it, like
A, B,
9,
C, D.
9 through D?
Yeah. yeah
oh,
yeah.
really? 9,
yeah,
9 A, B, C, and D
are
all gone?
They're in the ROM, like, but they're dummied out. You can't play them. It's a shame. But here's what they added. A save feature. At any point on the world map, you can just save your game, and mm-hmm. it saves your lives and everything. It's a great recording feature. There's a world map, as you mentioned before. There are red coins and Yoshi eggs in each stage, things for you to find.
In the challenge mode, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
There's a multiplayer mode where you can link up with another player and race to complete levels to see who gets the best time. There's a single player version of that called You versus Boo, which people we had some people write in about this episode, and a lot of people called out You versus Boo as one of their favorite Mario things because it is a race through each Mario stage against a Boo, and once you beat that Boo, another Boo appears. It's a different color. And you have to beat it,
right,
and it makes better time. And then I think the ultimate Boo, like the hardest Boo, is actually just – it's a ghost like copying your previous play data. So you have to outrace yourself after you've basically mastered all the other Boo races. So you can really go as deep into that as you want.
Mm-hmm.
There are Game Boy printer images that you can print out because Game Boy printer was a thing. If you beat the game, you can actually redesign the title screen. There's like an editor that you unlock. Princess Peach is like, here you go. You can design a new title screen. There's also a calendar in the game. I don't know why, but there it is. It's a calendar.
You can save 15 dates on it. I bet it still goes up to 2020, right?
They just assume you're going to be playing this game every day, you know, checking in on your
calendar. Yeah, it was before Animal Crossing. Here you go.
Right.
And I think finally there's a fortune teller, which is just like a goofy little extra thing. If you go in, it'll tell you what your luck for the day is. But if you go into the fortune teller and you get a very lucky reading and then you start a new game, you start with 5 lives instead of 3.
Right.
It's just a stupid little hidden extra, but it's a little Easter egg.
Oh, but not finally. It also has a music player.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. And also, so Luigi has accurate colors. I'm looking at sprites. I think they did fix the Peach sprite. They made the Peach sprite improved for this 8-bit version. So she looks like a human being now.
And Luigi has different physics here,
too. Did they use the Mario 2 Peach sprite, or was it totally
different? Oh, it's a new sprite entirely, yeah. Wow. It's like sort of better proportions. I don't know if Ray can see this.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's based on the original, but it's just like, you know, has legs.
There's a second pass happening, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically I recognize that this game is not the optimal way to play Super Mario Brothers, but I love what they did for this package. Like, compare that to Super Mario All-Stars for Wii, and
it's
night and day.
Right.
Like, hey, let's just dump a ROM on Wii versus, hey, let's just totally load this thing down with goofy little extras and fun bonuses to compensate for the fact that, it's kind of compromised.
So who made it?
It was Nintendo.
So not Tosei, right?
No, it was developed internally at
Nintendo.
That's
interesting. Mm-hmm. They gave Tosei Link's Awakening, but they did not want to farm this out then?
Link's Awakening DX.
DX, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So far as I'm aware, this was not...
Yeah, it's at R&D too when I looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if it was outsourced, no one has been able to track that down. Like, all the Mario remakes for Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, and this is like, it's post-emulation, but not really post-emulation because, like, emulation had not really become a huge mass phenomenon yet. So, you know, this was the only, if you wanted to play Super Mario Brothers legally, you know, you could either, you know, set up the old NES or you could buy this. And that was pretty much it. Like, it was pre-Virtual Console. It was pre any other release of the game. So it was very popular.
Right. And this game is also, I think, why we never got a Super Mario Advance version of Super Mario Brothers 1.
Yeah.
Because the remake already exists.
This covered it, yeah.
It's Mario Advance Zero.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Nintendo realized, hey, the screen cropping kind of sucked because you go to Game Boy Advance, which has a higher resolution than Game Boy and Game Boy Color, and the launch game for that system is Super Mario Advance, which is a remake of Super Mario Brothers 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they add a new title screen animation where there's like a grayed out border, and then the active screen space, like bright screen space, is the resolution of Game Boy and Game Boy Color. And you have the four characters for the game walk in, and they're like in silhouette when they're outside the border.
That's right.
And then they walk into the center screen where it's bright, and then they start pulling up the logo. And then the screen kind of expands and gives you the full resolution.
Yes.
And they're basically saying like, hey, check it out. You don't have the cropping anymore.
Yeah.
You've got full graphics now, which is a lie. This game was still cropped.
But it was close enough.
But it was closer.
Yeah.
Well, so for Super Mario Advance, there are a lot of places where like they didn't redesign any of the level designs. They didn't rearrange any of the level designs. So you do get like parts where, you know, a single room area will have to scroll back and forth, With the later advanced games, they changed that. So they just took the single screen rooms and made them actually one single screen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bigger deal with the bonus element for every single Mario Advance game, which is Mario Brothers, which is like why don't we start by talking about that?
That's a great version of Mario Brothers.
It is.
They also included it with Superstar Saga as well. Mm-hmm. Just like it was a very, very polished version of that game.
I think this version of Mario Brothers is unfairly scorned because it was included with five different games.
Yeah.
People were like, I'm sick of this. This is stupid. Who cares about Mario Brothers? But as a version of Mario Brothers, it's damn good.
Well, the idea was that, you know, if you met a friend and they had Superstar Saga, mm-hmm. but you had Super Mario Advance, you could both still play Mario mm-hmm. Brothers together.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Ray, I know you're a big fan of Mario Brothers. Do you have...
Okay. Who told you?
I am.
Okay, Bob, do you want to talk about this version? Yeah. What makes it so great?
I haven't actually played this version in a while, but it was just easily accessible, and it just felt like they had changed some of the physics a bit to be a little more close to the Mario controls that we know.
So
the jumps were a little less ice climbers-y than the original game.
Yeah, I think they totally redid the physics of the jump, and I think this is based on the Kaya Takita Mario Brothers version of Mario Brothers that was released on Famicom Disk System in the 80s and then released in Europe only on cartridge as Mario Brothers Classic. But that was like visually it was a closer version of the game to the arcade.
Right.
But it also made the physics a lot friendlier. So Mario and Luigi and Red Mario and Purple Luigi or whoever the characters are, they have the ability to bend the arc of their jump in midair. And
you recall the music was also good. There's music.
Yes. So this version of the game does not fit on a single screen, but you can scroll up and down using the shoulder buttons on the Game Boy Advance. So it kind of ratchet up and down. And it gets kind of hectic in fast-moving sections. You know, once you get past level 10 or so, there's a lot of enemies coming on the screen. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of be aware hey, what's above me? What's below me? So you're kind of constantly altering the screen directions. It's different when you're playing multiplayer because you have, kind of everyone's sort of doing their own thing. But when you're playing solo, it's pretty hectic. Well, then let's talk about Super Mario Advance, Super Mario Brothers 2/USA.
So I was living in Japan, I think when it was announced. I wasn't reading Nintendo Power when it was announced. There wasn't really that much to read about on the internet. So I was reading Famitsu, and the impression that I came away with was that this was a sequel to Super Mario Brothers 2. Because all they showed in the screenshots were the new elements. They showed screenshots of
Roboberto.
Peach. Roboberto was a big one. Peach pulling up gigantic turnips. They were showing all of the things that were different. And I bought the Game Boy Advance the day it came out. And I bought the game the day it came out. And I popped the game in and I started playing it. And it kind of dawned on me only as I was playing the game that this was actually just Super Mario USA Mario 2 with enhancements. Mm. I really thought that it was going to be a full-on sequel.
You know, now that you mentioned that, I had that same perception too.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I never bothered to play this game until just recently.
Oh, okay. They really led with all of the things that were different. I mean, it's so weird to be like, oh, here's a Mecha Birdo. It's like, to me, that was very strange, the idea that they were going to – it didn't dawn on me that they would take the game and change it that much by putting a brand new boss character into it. That wasn't really something that was done very often. There were no remakes of games in the year 2000, so it was just kind of I just figured it was just a new game.
Yeah, I imported a Game Boy Advance very early, right after it came out in Japan, and this with it.
Yep.
And started playing and said,
Yeah.
So then I played Circle of the Moon a lot. And then I got to a point where I couldn't see the projectiles on the screen and said,
I played the hell out of it.
I think Crazy Racers. I don't know.
Still played this all the way through. I still really enjoyed it because, I mean, you know, it's Mario 2. It's great. So, I mean, I was that initial little bit of disappointment that I was like, oh, no, wait. I mean, I still love this game, so I'll play it.
I only finished it for the first time and really only played past, like, World 2-1 for the first time about a month ago.
Yeah, I'm glad I watched your video because I bought this at launch in America with the Game Boy Advance and Castlevania. And I played about half of it, but I was like, I get it. It was just sort of fun to see this level of graphics on a portable thing at the time.
Yeah.
And I got rid of it really quickly, but I had no idea what was in the game beyond what I knew until I saw your video. Yeah,
it's really weird.
And the back of the box has makes you think there's more going on because the back of the box has one screenshot from the Mario 2 version of the game, or Mario 2 portion of the game, and it's Mario holding up a giant turnip, which I don't think I actually saw.
Right. Oh, yeah. This all makes me think of the dorm room that I lived in Japan, and it was like this little efficiency sort of thing where it had a desk, and then right over the desk there was a light mounted underneath the shelf on like in everybody's room, and I always think about that because it's like that was the year of the Game Boy Advance, it was the year of the WonderSwan Color with Final Fantasy 1 and 2, and it was the year of me sitting at that desk using the hell out of that big bright light that I luckily had to be able to play both of those systems. Circle of the Moon, yeah, like that was like I had to have like that light shining right down on that screen like in full brightness all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Ray, what has been your experience with
Mario
Advance?
I also imported a GBA with that and F-Zero, so I basically only played those until like the US launch when I actually got all the other games that everybody said to get, like Castlevania and Choo Choo Rocket and stuff. So I mean, I did enjoy it. I mean, I don't have much to add, really. I don't hate it or anything. Certainly, the voices did not affect me or make me hate it as much as some other people.
Yeah, so I
recently... I'm a crystal!
Jeez. I think I just died. Yeah, I just recently published a video retrospective of this for Game Boy Works Advance and made comments about how frustrating the voices are. Like, it was just one one section about, like,
very mildly,
the voices are not good and they're really obtrusive and loud and distracting. But I titled the video, because I always put a goofy pun or something in my video titles, I called it Blighted by Voices, which I was like, it's a funny joke about the band Guided by Voices, but also making fun of the voices in this game. And people really have taken offense to that. Like, I didn't realize.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It did not occur to me.
Who are these freaks?
It didn't really occur to me that I've been making videos like about NES, Super NES, Game Boy, like these older systems, and it's like those are going to hit a different audience than people who were 5 or 6 when Game Boy Advance came out, and were like, I've had a lot of people who were like, this is my first video game system.
Right.
This was my first game that I ever played, and I thought the voices were great, and I realized all of a sudden, like, my videos are reaching a different audience than I'm used to.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have to kind of recalibrate, like, the way I approach things. I mean, because I'm kind of speaking to people who are more my age.
Okay,
and, like,
boomer.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You just dated this podcast. Thank you. Yeah, like, it's been kind of a revelatory experience for me, like, knowing that people will take great offense to the suggestion that Mario Advance's voices are bad.
The phrase "just what I needed" did not persist after this game, though. I don't know why they landed on song.
Yeah,
there were a couple of people who wrote letters, and all they did was just like include a link to a video for "just what I needed."
It's a great song. Great song.
R.I.P. Rick Ocasek.
I don't need to hear that.
He's in the Fireball
expression.
Zone now.
It's just weird. Like, out of all the things to land on, that is the thing that said the most in that game.
Yeah. Anyway, so. So people will defend the voices, but you will notice that in the later Mario Advance games, the characters talk a lot less. Like, they are very, very chatty in this game. Like, every action you take is basically accompanied by a voice sample. And this game is a game where you take a lot of actions, such as digging into the sand to reach the bottom of a large shaft of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you do that, say if you play Toad because he's the fastest at digging, it's like, ow, 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 ow.
Doesn't Birdo have like a monologue whenever you see them?
Birdo, she's always like, I'll remember this. Oh man, I'm super hoarse from being sick. She's like, yeah, I'll remember this. Every boss has like a quip when you enter their room and then when you defeat them.
I did want to hear what Mauser sounded like for the first time.
I don't remember, but yes, everyone has a voice.
I mean, yeah. It lends to the whole feeling. Like, to me, this is like the first Mario game since like 64 that feels just kind of like half of a tech demo.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that that screen cropping animation at the beginning too. It's like, oh yeah, we're on a different system. It's like a mini tech demo, and then all this voices stuff. Like, oh yeah, check out what we can do. And
yeah,
the scaling.
There's just all kinds of There's weird stuff in the game that just kind of shows up haphazardly. Like the very first screen, you know, where you kind of fall and go to the door. Like at the bottom of that hill that you fall down, there's one little piece of ground that when you step on it, it goes brrr, and there's like a creature underneath it or something.
Oh, so weird.
And
yeah.
Like it springs up. But that doesn't really happen anywhere else. There's one jar in the game where there's like this weird pulsing spike that keeps bouncing into, like shooting into the air.
Yeah.
It's only in one room.
Right.
It's like a graphical glitch or something. It's just like there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's just all kinds of stuff like that where it's just like, what's this
You're
doing?
Going underground, there's like a Ferris wheel under a pipe with like weird scaling technology.
The Ferris wheel is like pretty much every, like half the jars you go into have this kind of like Ferris wheel with like a shy guy on, or
it's,
two shy guys
confusing.
On it.
It's confusing. It's confusing to me.
Yeah. Like another thing about this game is that they added a scoring system that was not originally in Mario 2.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, Doki Doki Panic. Mm-hmm. It was just like, hey, play and get to the end and beat Wart. Mm. But now there's a scoring system. And because of the addition of a scoring system, that this adds all the other elements of scoring that you associate with Mario, which means if you kill multiple consecutive enemies, you get 200, 400, 800 points and then start getting one-ups.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, this game was not designed around that.
Yeah.
So there are lots of opportunities to kill a shit ton of enemies and get like five up all at once, like throw a POW block or throw a giant turnip or something and go brump, 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 brump and hit a string of enemies. Like by the end of this game, I had just a ridiculous, obscene number of lives.
Yeah.
This is the first game with like life creep, I think, in Mario's series.
Yeah.
Like this happens all the time now. But this was the first time I really noticed it.
Yeah. So they basically took a, you know, balanced game and completely broke the balance
by adding
it as much as they possibly
could. Well, I mean, then
they
added, you know, a save feature. So you
save. Sure. Right.
Which you could not do in the original. You had two continues in the American version.
Yeah. So that completely broke it entirely. So why not just go all the way? I mean, yeah. So it does. It is a tech demo.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what it is.
Every stage now has a third mushroom.
Oh,
like there's another place you can go into subspace and find a mushroom.
Yeah.
So you can get 5 life points instead of 4.
Okay.
If you know where to look.
Right.
But then, you know, there's all kinds of extra stuff. Like once you beat the game, you can go back into stages and two of the mushrooms will be replaced by a Yoshi egg. You don't know which two mushrooms, but somewhere, like, the mushrooms have become Yoshi eggs. Hmm. So then the third mushroom in the stage becomes actually your only extra point of life because the Yoshi eggs don't give you extra life.
What do the Yoshi eggs give you?
They just give you the satisfaction of finding a Yoshi egg and a little a little note on the map that says you found the Yoshi eggs on the stage.
Oh, okay.
So There's no achievement for finding them, unlike in Mario Deluxe, but it is an extra thing you can do post-game.
What a weird game. So if you want to play it again.
Yeah. So and another interesting thing is that even though this looks like Super Mario All-Stars at first glance, the character sprites are not the ones from Super Mario All-Stars. They're all new character sprites.
Yeah.
They've drawn all new sprites. And I feel like a lot of the elements were taken from the BS Super Mario USA BS Challenge or Super Challenge or something.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah,
like
okay.
Guided by Voices, a limited time thing for the Satellaview accessory in Japan. Like people know about the Zelda, I think, the BS Zelda games where it was like someone was guiding you through the game and you had like 1 hour to complete the stages. But they did that with Mario USA also, Mario 2. And you don't really hear about that as much, but it was the same sort of thing where you would like be sent to a specific stage and you would have like 15 minutes to beat it and then you could go beat Toad or something.
Yeah, they did that with all the All-Stars games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, all the All-Stars games. Again.
Yeah, pretty much.
They partitioned them out like that. But yeah, there's just like all kinds of really strange stuff in this. Of all the advanced games, it's the until you get to the E-card stuff in Mario Advance 4, like this is the wildest, like, what is happening here kind of game. They really kind of reined it in for the later games. But this one is just like, wow, new portable hardware, so much power. What can we do here? And then I think they kind of stepped back and said, what have we done? Oh, my God.
Yeah, because for the next game, Super Mario World, it was a lot closer to just being Mario World with a few extra. It didn't really take away from the feeling of playing Mario World.
Yeah, Super Mario Advance 2 was interesting because it came out also in 2001 in Japan and very soon after in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So it was like 8 months after the Japanese release, the original release of Super Mario Advance. And then the other games were spaced more like a year or two apart.
Yep.
But yeah, the only really big change in Super Mario Advance 2 from the original Super Mario World was that first there's an intro cutscene where Mario and Luigi and Peach take a hot air balloon and land on Dinosaur Island, and Mario and Luigi find the cape or the feather and get capes, and then they go flying around like total assholes. They just leave Peach behind. And then they come back and they're like, oh, wait, she's not here anymore as we were just farting around in the sky and not paying any attention to our friend.
Yeah, it puts a new twist on the plot of that game.
Yeah, so they really brought it on themselves. But the big change is that you can it's a one-player game now. There's no two-player mode. So to play as Luigi, you just hit the R button when you're on the world map and you'll switch characters. And Luigi has totally different physics, including like his fireballs. Instead of doing the usual bounce that they do, they bounce way high in the air with a more shallow arc.
Yep. And you get the unique Luigi sprite from the Mario All-Stars version of Mario World.
Well, no, it is different.
It is different?
Yeah, it is another redrawing.
Interesting, but it's still a unique sprite, which was not the case in Mario World. There was no unique Luigi sprite in that game. Also, I'm looking at the list of changes on the wiki. The Koopalings and Bowsers all grew an extra finger for some reason.
Did they have four originally?
I think they had four originally. There's a lot of, like, if you look at the wiki for each of these games, there's like dozens of dungeons of like really tiny changes.
They're super minute, but but the substantial changes are things like you can save anytime, not just after completing a Switch Palace or a Fortress. This game, unlike Mario Advance, when there's a single screen room, like it is now single screen on the Game Boy Advance screen. They redrew a lot of stuff, rearranged level layouts to kind of fit better. Dragon coins are present in all stages. I don't think they were in Fortresses and Ghost Houses before, but now they are. And when you ride a different colored Yoshi and eat berries as that Yoshi, it will poop different things instead of just a super mushroom.
And the dragon coins have a purpose now, right? You get a special ending if you get them all. Before, it was just like in the Mario World, the original release, it was like, well, here are five things to get in a stage to get a one-up, right?
Yeah. And now this game, it keeps track.
Yeah, and if you get all of them, you get a special, like, slightly different ending. So there's a point to collecting these things now. Yeah.
And the other big difference is that the graphics are way more washed out because the Game Boy Advance had a dim screen.
Super washed out world.
Yep. And there are ROM hacks that you can apply and they will fix the color balance on all these games. So if you were playing on...
If you were a criminal like Bob playing on an emulator.
Yeah, you could play on an emulator. But if you play on something like Analog Pocket or even a backlit GBA, then you're going to not be like, wow, everything seems to have been bleached.
That's a good idea.
Someone left Super Mario 2 in the sun too long.
Ooh, so, quick side note to that, though. There's also color remakes of Mario Land 1 and 2 someone made.
Oh, yeah. So I need to try this one day. All right, so we'll kind of wrap up here with looking at Yoshi's Island, Super Mario Advance 3, which has barely changed. It feels like they got the game – they had the game right the first time. And so what you see here, the changes in this version of the game, they're just like minor tweaks. It's just like they kind of rebalance some things and were like, oh, well, here is a point where you could get stuck or where maybe the stage went a little too long, so they added an extra checkpoint. But it's really, really minor. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is that some of the cool super effects they look kind of bad now. Like touch fuzzy, get dizzy, not so great.
I will say that for a while, like my hat is off to them for getting this to work, number one. And for a while, this is the only version of this game that was available to people outside the SNES release. It is so poorly done compared to the original version. Like I'm glad that the SNES Classic exists because – when this is all you can get, it's fine. But if you play them like next to each other or one after the other, this is so inferior. And you don't really understand that until you actually play the original.
Right. But it was years before you...
I understand that.
Actually, can you even play Yoshi's Island Portable? No, you can't.
I think it's on Switch, isn't it?
Is it on Switch? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, it's on the Switch SNES collection.
So it took 15 years, 16 years. Yep. But finally, we have a proper version of Yoshi's Island to play on the go. But until then, you know, until that arrived, this was the way to do it. Yeah, so the final game to talk about – one big revolution that Yoshi's Island introduced was sleep mode. the ability put the game into a suspended animation, like a low power mode, at any time, basically. You just pause and choose sleep mode, and then you could wake it up by hitting select L and R at the same time.
Yeah, that was a new thing Nintendo did for several other games. I think the NES Classics on GBA did that too.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, did they? Okay, yeah. I think this came out before all of those. It was also in Superstar Saga.
Yeah, yeah.
A few other games. But, you know, before the DS where you could just go and close the clamshell.
Right.
That was not something you could easily do, and it made a big difference. Like, you know, not having to go through the boot up cycle and see the bring, bling, and the title screens and everything, choose a level. You could just stop and then resume. That was a big, big change. So great innovation there. Finally, Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3, as Bob says, the most tortured and confused title.
So sad.
The precursor legacy. This one was pretty much the same as the Super Mario All-Stars version of Mario 3, but then it had the e-reader stuff, and that's that's wild. So let's see. What are the changes here? Yeah, like they tweaked a little bit of Mario 3 to make it play a little more like Mario World, and they rebalanced a few things to accommodate for the changed resolution. Like, Lakitu actually flies a little lower, like one tile lower in levels, so he's not like scraping the top of the screen, which actually makes it easier to jump on him and take over the cloud. But other than that, it's pretty much the same thing. But then there's the e-cards. Did you guys ever do anything with the e-cards?
Yes.
I still haven't, and I got to get that Wii U version of this game before time's up.
I think I had like one pack of e-cards, so I played a couple of the levels.
So I got, it's your moment to shine.
First of all, I was as hyped for this as Mario Deluxe, and then I got the Walmart edition, which came with extra e-cards.
It was like 32 cards or something. It was like 16, I think.
Do we need to explain the e-reader to children?
It's like 8.
Or listeners?
Yeah, sure. Bob, go for it.
The e-reader was a pre-digital marketplace DLC where you would buy this device for your Game Boy Advance instead of buying a pack of levels online, you would buy a pack of cards, and there'd be random items or levels or things you would want for your game. And very few games actually supported this, but this is one of them.
They actually released NES games as e-reader cards. You could buy video games on paper and swipe them through
the
e-reader.
Not like Amiibo cards where there's RFID computer chip inside.
It was
ones and zeros micro printed on the paper of the card.
And it took like five cards to have Donkey Kong Jr.
Pinball, like the most basic.
Yeah,
lowest.
Let's be clear. Not NES games you'd want to play, but of course Urban Champion.
There's Urban Champion, man.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
They got a 3DS remake.
Esports. But they used technology that was invented by Olympus for like these sort of almost microscopic dot printing technology because you couldn't do the fun kind of
micro dot.
Right. You couldn't do it with like an inkjet printer, so you couldn't copy cards that way. It had to be done a special way, but it was still cheap because it was still all on paper and ink. It wasn't like magnetic stripes or anything. But it meant you also had to swipe these cards in succession quite slowly for the little reader to be able to read them all in a stable manner.
It was better probably for Animal Crossing, right? Like it was better for like Animal Crossing and then like, you know, getting new items or furniture or whatever versus like the NES game application of it was cool. Like, oh, this game exists on paper, but it also sucks.
That's why most of the cards were just one card and not all NES games
But the Mario 3 e-cards were cool because I think you just scanned in the level and then it's like, oh, okay, then the level was just in your game.
Well, it wasn't just levels. There were also like weird items that you could get, like things from Super Mario Brothers 2 that would appear in Mario 3.
What we now call consumables in the mobile space. Or you can just get an extra 1-up or 2 or 3.
Did you have any favorite levels here?
Oh, I don't know about favorites. I mean, I just like that whole concept. Because I talked about it before when we were talking about Mario Maker, because it was like kind of like a proto version of that. These are a bunch of wild levels that don't really adhere to anything in the main game. Yeah.
And when they released it for Wii U, for the Game Boy Advance Virtual Console on Wii U, it just included all that stuff,
I think the original version of the game could only save like 32 stages or 32 bonus items. Like you couldn't scan and save every single Mario 3 card into that.
Oh, okay.
But I think the Wii U version is like loaded down maxed out. I don't know exactly how
it was hacked.
That,
as I understood it, it was just like they didn't even release them all the levels.
I think that's correct. Like, there were some that were Japan only. Yeah. There were some that were Walmart exclusive.
Oh, but then still some that didn't even come out. I don't know.
I don't know exactly.
Probably more, because they were like, actually, everyone hates e-cards because they're crappy.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of was like the best application of e-cards, but this thing did not take. Sorry, Animal Crossing. I think Mario levels are more exciting than Animal Crossing stuff. But
yeah. But as said, Mario Advance 4 on Wii U Virtual Console does include the e-reader cards. So that's currently still available. I highly recommend picking it up. It's not very expensive. It's like $8 or $9. And it's a pretty good version of Mario 3. Plus, it has some really weird exclusive stuff that you're not going to find any other way. Although I think people were making recreating the e-reader levels in Mario Maker to the best of their ability. Mm. But it's still not going to have all the like wacky-ass stuff.
I could have told you that. I'm sure they did.
Anyway, final thoughts on Mario's his old portable games, not his new portable games.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, we see after it was this split, this division of the Mario and Wario series, where Wario became the one where, okay, we're actually going to make new games in the Wario series for Game Boy Advance, etc. And then the Mario series very quickly ended the idea of we're going to make new original games and just went straight into remakes. Which makes sense, certainly, but it was sort of disappointing that they did not create new Mario games for the portables past Mario Land 2, because it would have been nice, because everything was compromised after that, right? Because everything was some kind of a compromised port of an older game, rather than creating something on the Game Boy. It's weird that Game Boy Advance didn't have an original Mario. There was no original Mario game for Game Boy Advance, you know? It would have been interesting to see what they had accomplished with that. But Game Boy Advance, like, Nintendo didn't do a whole lot of original games for the Game Boy Advance. Like, it seems like they've looked very much at Game Boy Advance as, oh, just like the Game Boy Color was our chance to revisit the NES, Game Boy Advance is our chance to revisit the Super NES. And that's kind of what Nintendo and everybody looked at.
I mean, they were going to do that with DS. The launch title for Nintendo DS was Super Mario 64. They were just like, oh, it's our chance to revisit N64.
Right.
But
And they actually dropped that pretty – no.
Yeah, yeah. They dropped that pretty quickly, thankfully.
I'm glad,
But yeah, I mean, I kind of respect and understand that, because hey, there are all these great old games that are not available any longer. But now that's not really necessary, because there's so many distribution methods to getting old games out there that you don't have to keep rehashing them. You can move ahead and then make old games available as they are. Bob, Ray?
I
was going to reiterate my point, was that you kind of had to be there. Like, these are not exactly the versions of the games that will be in the museum installation. They'll probably be in the display case next to the real original Super Mario Brothers, but, you know, not the things that everybody's going to want to leap at, with few exceptions, unless you really are interested in, like, the additional things to Mario Deluxe and so on and so forth. Like, those are worth looking at. But yeah, it's not going to be – yeah, go ahead and sit down with this. Yeah, experience it the way it was meant to be played. Like, no, you're not going to – nobody's going
to
say that.
I still want a sequel to Super Mario Brothers 2. I'm still mad that there's no Mario USA 2 out there.
No, I was with Chris in that I wish they would have made original games, and I was not really on board with these when they were new. But they are fun curiosities as like an archivist to know like what has been changed and what they were doing for the market at the time. And it's cool that – weirdly enough, the Wii U is like a very comprehensive emulation spot for Game Boy Advance, where nothing else is. Like, so much was collected there, like the Castlevania games. Right. I think all of these games are on Wii U Virtual Console. Yes. So yeah, that could be the last place that you'll ever see them again. I don't really think these will be on Switch anytime soon.
Probably not.
No.
But you will see reviews of them on my YouTube channel someday, probably. Anyway, yeah, thanks guys for taking a journey through this odd little niche of Mario history. I'm glad we've got it covered. Our comprehensive coverage of Mario continues. We'll get them all one of these days. But for the moment, please let us know where we can find you talking about things that are not necessarily Mario.
Yes, I'm Chris Kohler. I am still features editor at Kotaku, which I will mostly just edit things, but occasionally just sort of emerge from my hole and write about retro games. Typically, that's what I get motivated to write about, as you might imagine.
And we can find you on
Twitter. Oh, on Twitter at Kobunheat, KOBUNHEAT.
All right. Ray?
I'm on Twitter as RDBAAA, mostly just now trying to find ways to not be broke. So I also set up a Ko-fi page or Ko-fi, whatever they call it now. That's also RDBAAA if you want to give me some money for some things. I also made a game called Blast Rush at blastrush.com. That's on mobile. Those are the big things, yeah.
Hey, it's Bob Mackey. I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo. I do other podcasts about old things, but they're old cartoons. So that's Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. You can find those wherever you find podcasts or go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons for more stuff that you can't get for free, including limited miniseries and all kinds of good stuff. Check it out at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And finally, I'm Jeremy Parrish. You can find me on Twitter as GameSpite and here at Retronauts, retronauts.com and iTunes and other places like that. Every Monday and every other Friday, we release a podcast episode that you can listen to just like the one you're listening to now. And if you can't wait for those episodes to come out, well, good news, you can get them a week early by going to patreon.com/retronauts and you can subscribe for $3 a month to get early episodes, early access, lots of cool stuff, bonuses, things like that. And that helps, you know, pay the bills, keep the lights on, help me fly out here to record podcasts with these guys and other people. And yeah, that'd be great. You can also check out some YouTube video retrospectives that I put together on a few of the games we covered here, Mario Land and Mario Advance, on my YouTube page. Just look for Jeremy Parrish. And yeah, I keep talking about games, old games, in video and podcast form. I just won't stop. And neither will these guys, because these are just what we needed.